This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 63, where we're going to catch up on some of the latest cloud news, recorded live January the 9th, 2015.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Hey, good morning, AC. How are you?
Doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Not too bad. I guess for those listening, AC's back in Florida, but had just spent a little bit of time up here in Redmond. So we, unlike normal, when we don't get to see each other all that often, we just spent some of the last week together. good having you in town.
Yeah, man, it was good. It was, I had intended to hopefully try and do this where we could do it together live, and I had to change my flight a little bit and go home a day early. But good hanging out. It was fun up there. I was doing I was working on recording some content that I've been working on for Microsoft around the Microsoft Virtual Academy, and a bunch of with Scott Hillier and Ted Patterson, and we did a bunch of modules on like SharePoint development. It's interesting though, sitting in the studio, a professional studio, and having like cameras and teleprompters and all this stuff, and you have little red lights on cameras, and you have to remember to make sure you look to the right camera, kind of move around, make sure you got a good feel to it. Keep in mind that if you're going to have a drink while you're up there, you drink non-alcoholic drink. But if you're going to have a drink while you're on camera, you got to go grab a Microsoft cup and fill it up in the cup and not have just, I can't go get like a Coke. I got to go get a...
Yeah, some random cups, yeah.
A Coke and a Microsoft cup.
Right, yeah. There's all the concerns about branding on camera and all that. Yeah, it's I think that the booze may help, you know, those recordings sometimes.
You know, it's the first time I've done it. Ted and Scott have done a couple other ones. And it's the first time I've done this. I've done a bunch of screencasts and stuff and have a bunch of videos I've published in the past. But for a live thing where you're getting recorded in the camera for, you know, being produced later, where it's almost like a newscast or something, it was interesting because it's, you have to be careful. I was sat down when Scott was starting out for the first time because I wanted to see how everything was kind of laid out and so it wasn't foreign when I walked in. And I found that recording was actually pretty easy. It's that first 5 seconds of getting started and how are you going to kind of lead into it. So it was weird because it's a whole course. There's a bunch of modules and we didn't record the modules in order, but you have to record like people are going to just kind of swoop in, watch a module and then leave and not watch them all in succession. And you also have to treat it like they're all there. They've all been recorded at the same time. So
yeah,
you know, we had to make sure that we, you know, wore the same shirt every day. And when you go out for lunch, I'd like to take my jacket and zip the thing all the way up. So if I spilled anything, it got it on my jacket and did get on my shirt. Because apparently there was one time when like Ted got some water on his shirt and they had to wait around for the shirt to dry.
Get a hair dryer or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, on big budget films, I guess they've got people watching for continuity and all that. But in small budget tech recordings, not quite as good.
Yeah.
But the I guess for those listening, these guys were recording bunch of training modules, as you pointed out, and they should go live in the next, you know, week or two. So you'll be recorded in all of your glory talking about cloudy dev Office 365 topics. So people can stay tuned to watch your ugly mug up on the big screen.
Yeah. We did one module too on what was it called? We did one module on on Angular. Oh, so yeah, two funny stories about that we did. Did one module on Angular, and knowing that the video was going to go live in the next week, but knowing that someone may go watch it in 7 or 8 months or a year,
yeah,
around stuff that changes so frequently, we wanted to go through and qualify it somehow. So I had to come somehow say without any kind of like timeliness, hey, this is all based on the current version of Angular that's out there. Yes, there's been 2.0 has been discussed, but it still isn't even known when that's going to be. That could be months away. So there's things that we're going to talk about that don't apply anymore, but at any rate, it was interesting. And then the other one that was funny was, so we had this, we had a timer going and the guy that was running the studio was like, you need to shoot to be like 50 minutes. Like, okay, we'll be 50 minutes. We can do that. It's not a problem. We've done this before. And there was a comment he said something like, you want 50 minutes on the timer when Scott was going to leave this one module on, I believe it was search. And the guy said, you want 50 on there? And he's like, oh, yeah. But he made a comment that made it sound like I won't need the 50 minutes. Like, okay, so Scott's not going to need the 50 minutes. That's all good. But when Scott said that, I got the impression that he meant that we would come in under 50 minutes. So I didn't really say anything. I'm like, okay, cool. We'll get out of here early. This will be a nice one. It's one of the last ones of the day. So we start going through, and after about 10 minutes, I look up at the timer and it shows that we've got 9 minutes have elapsed. And I look at where we are in the slide deck. When the camera's not on me, I have my own screen in front of me, and I could, you know, it was all Scott was presenting the whole time. And so I could, actually, I was watching some ESPN videos from the, while he was teaching one time, but I'm watching the slide sorter, and I'm like, man, he's making a good clip here. We got a lot of content going. So we got farther and farther along. He got to the last demo, and there were 14 minutes remaining. And I looked at it, and I'm like, oh, okay, so we're not getting out of here early. No big deal. He's got to do the demo. He's got to do some wrap-up stuff. Then we got to talk a little bit about the marketing stuff that we have to put in at the end of the slides. And he finished it, and then he pitched it over to me as I was doing the marketing stuff and telling people where to get more information. And I started going on about github.com/officedev and the stuff that you can find there, unknowingly that Scott was getting a little freaked out at this. And then when I'm done, I pitch it back to Scott, and then I look up and I look at the timer and I see 5 seconds. It's going like 5, 4. And all of a sudden I have this realization going, holy crap, he's going to nail 50 minutes right on the dot. And I'm just going, he goes 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And he got right to the very end and he stopped right at 0. And you've got, if both of us are on camera when they did that, and I'm curious to see where the guy cuts it, because I swear my mouth just starts, my jaw just hits the ground like going, and I almost bust, I didn't say it, but it was almost one of those like, holy shit, you just nailed this. right when he cut it off. And he might even leave that because I think, well, he's probably going to cut it off because I think I did drop a four-letter word, but we both just kind of looked over and gave like high fives and stuff right at the very end. I was like, you got to be kidding me. You nailed it. He goes, oh man, I like 25 minutes. I thought I was in pretty good shape and I thought I was going to give it a shot. And I'm like, I didn't realize it until the last 5 seconds. I almost screwed you up.
Oh, dude, timing things like that, like sessions at conferences, I find really hard. So it's difficult.
Well, especially to nail it on the second.
Oh, yeah.
I was very impressed when he did that. It was really cool. So
cool. Well, it's at this end of the world. It's really about gearing up for this next half, right? It's kicked off in earnest, obviously, and we're back into full swing and the team's back on board from being away on holiday. So we're cranking at work. And really, we're all heading towards build now, which is going to be the next sort of big set of developer announcements and news and stuff like that for Office 365. So we're kind of aligning all of our various efforts to sort of land around then. So build should be an exciting time for us. Build and Ignite, really. Those are the two kind of back-to-back weeks at the end of April and early May, so the first week of May. And so we'll be going to San Francisco for build, I believe. Yeah, San Francisco, yeah. Right? Good. I booked my airline tickets there last night. and then off to Chicago for Ignite on May the 4th. So it's going to be a busy time of the year, but we're really looking forward to it.
May the 4th.
Be with you.
May the 4th be with you.
It's true.
God, we're such geeks.
If you see a dude with an Office 365 sticker on his chest plate of the Stormtrooper outfit, that'll be me.
I would love to get... You've heard of the 105th Legion, right?
Yeah.
The Star Wars guys that have the full-on...
Yeah, the full garb. Yeah. It's pretty impressive.
I would love to get one of those suits. Wear it like Halloween or something, or show up at the conference one time, just have like just the helmet on, so...
Be nice. Hey, so this episode, we're going to try and keep this one a little shorter than the last few, where we've kind of gone more like an hour than 30 minutes.
We kind of have to, because it was in the last 2 weeks, it's been New Year's and Christmas, and there hasn't been a whole lot of news.
Yeah, true. True, actually. This one's going to be a little short. So we're going to try and stick to the 30-minute thing and make it nice and consumable. But we thought we'd wrap up a little bit of the news about what's happened more recently, you know, over the last couple of weeks with New Year and then before that with Christmas and things, and just do a short sort of wrap up of the things that we collected during that time. So with that, why don't we get stuck into the news?
Sounds good. Who wants to go first?
I got one to kick off.
Go for it.
It's not Microsoft. It's Amazon.
Ooh.
So some time back, this is not brand new news. I should caveat that with this. It's just something I've had marked for us to talk about for a little while. It's a new service from Amazon called Amazon Cognito.
Mm.
It sounds pretty fancy, if you ask me.
What is this?
So this is a service that lets you, if you're a developer, it's a service from Amazon that helps you sync data across different devices. So say you're building an application, you can save data to this thing and it'll help sync across all of the different devices that that app runs on, and have it all sync, you know, keep synchronized across the thing. So I guess this is kind of similar to Azure Mobile Services in one regard, and kind of like the service in Windows. As a developer, you can save app data to a store that Windows takes care of syncing across your different devices, whether that be a Windows tablet or laptop or a Windows phone, for example. So here's an example. So in my trips, I can sync your preferences between your mobile phone app and my trips on Windows 8. And I don't have to do that plumbing.
It just does it all for you.
Yeah, Windows takes care of it.
That's really nice. Yeah, this is pretty cool. This is, nice to see Amazon is, they're playing catch up to Microsoft, it looks like, on the Azure, because Azure has something similar. But
yeah, some of these developer style sort of services like this one, right? Like this is sort of application plumbing that you don't, nobody wants to write this stuff because, you know, it's just the, it's just plumbing and it's just table stakes stuff that you need.
Yeah, it looks, and I'm trying to parse this to see if this is if it's a competitor to it, but I wonder if it's anything like that product Firebase, which is something that's pretty, it's pretty popular also in the open source space, where you essentially don't worry about the back end. You have some data that you need to get stored and you kind of throw it at Firebase, and it also lets you from different devices be able to pull that back and forth. So it's almost like, I've always thought of Firebase as kind of like a document DB service that you just write to and don't worry about any of the back end. They figure it all out for you.
Yeah, I haven't looked at Firebase, to be honest. You know, I've heard the name a lot, but I haven't dug into it.
Yeah, that, well, it's now a Google thing. Google bought them at the end of, towards the end of 2014. But yeah, that's a nice little service offering for.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting foray into more sort of, I was going to say less commodity services like storage and compute, and kind of like the next higher order, you know, piece of the puzzle by providing a, you know, a developer service that people can take advantage of.
God, these clouds have gotten so many services in them. It's hard to figure out, you know, what's available or, but I mean, it's a good problem to have. It's just, you know, hey, I can be 100% cloud developer and you just, everything you need is going to be there, it seems.
Yeah. And things like this, it's like, you know, if you've got apps on different types of devices, like maybe you've got an Android version and a Windows Phone version and an iOS version, just being able to plumb your app with the same service behind the scenes and synchronize user settings and various bits of state and things like that in your app is really, really helpful.
Yeah, it definitely is.
So yeah, so that's Amazon Cognito.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool little thing to mention there. Hey, I got one. I got one I think everybody's been kind of waiting for too.
Ooh, interesting.
So Microsoft has, I guess I could say finally, but they have now released the pricing for those Godzilla virtual machines. Sorry, the G series.
Yeah, yeah. So is the pricing as Godzilla as the VMs are?
You know, it is much more, but I don't think they're really all that bad. I mean, they're in terms of the pricing for what you would use them for, they're not that bad, especially for the size of these machines. Because I mean, I'm going to look at it in the sense of, I'm only going to use these VMs to host a developer instance of, like, say, for example, SharePoint. I'm going to run my stuff in one of these developer instances and just see, you know, to have when I'm doing testing and stuff. So there's five different sizes that you have. You got a G1 up to a G5. G5, right?
Everybody wants to rock the G5.
Everyone wants to rock the G5. But this G5 is significantly less than the one that we all want to rock, right? Which is the nice plane. So the G1 starts with two virtual cores, 28 gigs of RAM, and a 412 gig SSD.
That's a decent size.
That's a really good machine.
Yeah.
67 cents an hour. That's about $500 a month.
Is that on 24 hours a day?
It's about $498 a month if it's on 24 hours a day for a month.
And we all know you don't want to leave your VMs on 24 hours a day.
No, well.
Not for developers anyway.
Not for developers, no. So and that's so what's that going to run you? 28 gigs of RAM on that guy right there is going to run you about $6,000 a year for a server. I mean, you figure you're going to have a server with 28 gigs of RAM. Two cores and 28 gigs of RAM. That's not a bad machine, especially for a developer machine.
Yeah.
But obviously, it goes up from there. G2s are twice the cores. It's four cores, 56 gigs of RAM, 825 gigs on the drive. That one bumps up. That's twice the price. That's $1.34 an hour, all the way up to a G5.
That's $10 a day. And if you think about what somebody, like say a developer, is costing you per day, right? For 8 hours, that's $10.
Mm-hmm.
That is not, incrementally, that is nothing. in comparison to what you're paying that person. And giving them a tool like that would be pretty sweet.
Not only that, giving them a $3,000, $4,000 laptop that's, you know, going to come with a chiropractor bill because these things are so heavy running with these virtual machines.
Yeah, yeah.
So it goes all the way up to a G5, 32 cores, 448 gigs of RAM, 6.6 terabyte of SSD at $9.65 an hour. That's about $7,180 a month if it's left on the whole time.
That's a pretty beasty machine.
I could do one hell of a Minecraft server.
You know, the 56 gig one is pretty badass for developers. Four cores, 56 gig of RAM. You could run things pretty quick on that with a terabyte of SSD.
Mm-hmm.
That's a badass dev machine right there.
So when I did the stuff for the NVA recording that we were talking about earlier, I have a machine that I ran that I run up in Azure, and all my stuff was living in Office 365. So I just needed a developer machine, and I didn't want to have to deal with anything hooking up my machine and RDPing or that kind of stuff to my laptop when I was in the training room. So I had my VM. I just had a little reminder that said, "Hey, right before you leave to go to campus and start doing the recording, go fire the VM on." And then at the end of the day, well, I actually configured Curb to shut it down.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it was that it's for those who are new to the show, CJ and I have a little startup we're working on that automatically shuts down VMs. It's Curb, KERRB.com. Not going to do a sales pitch, but it's not for sale yet. We're still working on it, but the engine's working. And so I went in and kind of tweaked the database a little bit and said, "Hey, go watch this one and shut it down." But, just to show you it's not ready yet, I still had a little reminder on my phone at 6:30 every evening. It was just like, double check the VMs off.
Yeah, just make sure the code's working.
Yeah, exactly. It was.
Brilliant. So. Brilliant. Oh, that's really good. I shouldn't sound so surprised.
Well, no, I am. It's not supposed to work that well. Not this early.
Ship it.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to work on.
Yeah. Yeah. Just no UI. Just call me when you want a database entry.
Yeah. By the time we actually ship this thing, people are going to be like, "Yeah, whatever. They just blew smoke up our ass for a year."
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Surprise. Blip, 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 blip. Anyway. Oh, that's pretty cool. That's nice to see those the Godzilla VMs come out. It'd be interesting to see what people use them for. Like, you know, whether it becomes sort of the de facto standard for running SharePoint IaaS VMs and bits and bobs or decent dev machines and things like that. Like, there's lots of flexibility in those ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
So the other thing they came out and announced at roughly the same time was a new thing called the Key Vault service, which is basically a new secure location for stashing your cryptographic keys and things like that that you might need in the cloud. And so this is, again, like Cognito was with Amazon adding something that, you know, Microsoft's got in different areas. This is something that Microsoft has added that Amazon has kind of had in their service for a little while, called the Amazon version of this is called the Cloud HSM service.
Mm.
But it's HSM stands for Hardware Security Modules, which are, you know, hardened bits of hardened bits of hardware.
It's really, really, it's titanium. It's made of titanium.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very, very, very hard. And so I'm no expert in this stuff, but I'm guessing it's kind of like a TPM module in your laptop where you can store keys and things like that. And they're tamper-proof, both physically, but also, you know, tough to get into from a piece of software, you know, secure storage type thing. So I guess it's for uses where you want to encrypt stuff in the cloud, potentially.
Mm.
A good example would be you want to encrypt blobs in Azure, for example. But you want the keys. And so you encrypt the blobs, you stick them in blob storage, and then you keep the keys up in this Key Vault service.
Mm.
And so it's available to things that want to get access to it, like for code, for example. I imagine maybe apps want to be able to get access to that encrypted data, but it done so in a secure manner.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Another new feature.
Yeah, always little additions here and there.
Yeah, they just, it's constantly come. Some of these things, I'm kind of like, you try and brainstorm, like, what's coming that's new? What can you anticipate that is missing from the platform? And I keep drawing blanks and they come out with something else. I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I can see a need for that. And it's like, yeah, I guess I can see a need for that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you never know, right? Because it's there's always something new.
Yeah. Hey, I found an article, or actually a blog post on the Azure blog I thought was really interesting.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's called Red Teaming. It's using cutting-edge threat simulation to harden the Microsoft Enterprise Cloud. So we'll all the things we're talking about, will obviously, like all the other shows, we'll have links to it in the show notes. And what we're finding what this is all about how Microsoft has a it's not just a Microsoft thing. A lot of companies do this where you have something called a red team and a blue team. And one team's job is to just try to do something to the environment, to try to go through and to hack it or something, or do some sort of penetration testing. And the other team is traditionally, they're not told that this is going on. So they're supposed to detect that there's something going on, and they're supposed to see how they can mitigate it or react to it. And it's kind of a way just to test your defenses.
Mm.
It's pretty cool because they'll do some things like, you know, can you get into this environment and leave something there? And then how long does it take the other team to find out that something was actually taken or something was actually stolen or something was actually left where it wasn't supposed to be? So it's an interesting article to see how Microsoft does this. It was published. It's one that I've been sitting on for a while. It's published back in early November of 2014. But very cool article. Fascinating to see how this stuff works.
A bit of a look behind the curtains on how they do some of these things.
Yeah. Yeah. And if anybody finds this interesting, this kind of stuff interesting, if you haven't read about how Netflix does this, I think Netflix is the most entertaining or interesting way of doing this stuff. It's called, they have an internal product called Chaos Monkey.
Mm.
And a bunch of other like products that are like that, that essentially they're not, I don't know if they're always running, but they constantly turn them on. And their only job is to go in and start wrecking stuff and to see how the platform responds. Like I know Chaos Monkey is literally, imagine a monkey running around your data center with like a monkey wrench and just, you know, causing complete hell.
Yeah.
And, you know, how if a data center goes down, how does Netflix respond, you know, automatically so that it hands off all the requests over to another data center? So, yeah, they've got a bunch of information about this on their blog, and they've even tagged a bunch of the posts with like Chaos Monkey and stuff.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Hey, while we're on the subject of
chaos
of Azure and new things coming out, I just found that I was looking at this page the other day, the preview features page on Azure. So although we sort of cover the news sporadically in the podcast, if anybody wants to find out all like a lot of what's new in Azure, in terms of new preview features that they're adding and things, if you go to azure.microsoft.com, I've got WAC ENUS here, /services/preview. It gives you a list of them. So things like Key Vault, SQL Database Update Preview, Premium Storage, Application Insights, Operational Insights, Batch, Storm, Stream Analytics, Data Factory, Live Streaming, Content Protection, Document DB, Azure Search, Machine Learning, Azure Site Recovery, Azure Files, and the Billing Alert Service are all services listed on the preview page. And you can go find information out about all these new preview features that have been added more recently. It's a good place to go and catch up on what's been, you know, if you haven't listened to every episode of the podcast over the last 6 months, that's probably a good place to go see the new preview features.
Hey, good find, man. I didn't know about this. I'm adding it to our show notes right now.
There you go. Yeah, we'll link to it off in the show notes and so you can go find it. You don't have to remember the URL.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah. One other thing we've talked about this before, is about premium storage. I think a couple of episodes we talked about, maybe 3 or 4 episodes now. It was a wee while ago, late last year. Mm. We talked about the new premium storage features, but I think I just wanted to cover off, this is currently another preview feature of premium storage. And basically it's the ability to attach high performance storage to your VMs and things in Azure. And the reason I say bring it up is because we just spoke about the Godzilla VMs, but you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see that if you don't want massive compute VMs with lots and lots of RAM, then you can still get lots and lots of storage and high performance storage at that, using the new high performance storage for virtual machines or premium storage. So you can get up to 32 terabytes of storage and around 50,000 IOPS per VM with less than a millisecond of read latency. So that's
crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah. I guess if you've got IO intense operations, then you know premium storage is going to be what you're after, regardless whether you need all the RAM and cores and stuff like that. But again, that's listed up on the preview page as well. So you can go, you know, read up about that stuff.
Oh, very cool.
But it's all SSD-based, kind of array-based stuff behind the scenes. And you can go build out some disks and attach them to your VMs and the persistent and all that sort of stuff. So for high IOPS workloads, that's that might be another option, as well as looking at the Godzilla VMs.
Hmm, cool. I have, while we're on the Azure topic, I got one more I'll throw in there to you that we didn't, it just dawned on me that I thought we should, I could mention.
Cool.
So when you do your Azure stuff, how do you do your management? Like, do you do everything through PowerShell? Do you do everything through the browser? Do you use the new portal, the preview portal or the current production portal? How do you do it?
I'm not a PowerShell guru. So either I use the old portal for the most part, but I've played around with a new portal as well. But given it, as I understand it, still doesn't do everything the old portal did.
No.
So I typically will just default back to the old portal. I know my way around it. I've got muscle memory. And so I've just been using that.
Yeah, it's. I'm surprised that we still are calling it the preview portal, because it got announced in...
Build last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, April of last year. And so we're coming up on a year. But there's still a ton of stuff that is in the preview portal. So I do a lot of stuff. I'm working on some stuff right now where Azure tables and Azure websites and a lot of storage and all that stuff. So the thing I'm working on is all Node. So I'm doing it all from OS X. I spend time using the preview portal, and I'm able to do just about everything I want to do. But man, I tell you, I use the Azure command line interface, the cross-platform command line interface, which is essentially it's a Node.js command for interface for interacting with Azure. I'm finding I like it more than using either of the browser-based portals, because it's very intuitive on how to work with everything. Just like PowerShell, it's very easy to get help on any of the stuff that you're trying to use and get documentation. But you can get a lot of extra data from the stuff that you're working with that you need to know within your application that you don't normally get from the browser. Like on any request that I make, trying to get a list of my websites or getting a list of any of my Azure, any of my deployments that I'm doing, I can just do a --, JSON on the end of it, and I get a JSON object back. And it's pretty cool because I was able to take I have a gulp task that I'm using to go through and do a lot of automate some of my deployment. And what it does is that when I start it up, I leave the websites turned off because they're not the standard, or the standard websites, so they're costing me something. And when I run it, it goes out and checks to see Azure really quick, sees if the sites are running, if they're not running, because it can just pull the JSON down. It can parse it on the fly. It's all like just scripted kind of based deployment, but it's all done straight from inside the editor that I'm using. It's wicked, wicked cool. I'm loving it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's super nerdy. I guess I don't spend enough time at the moment doing that stuff to really get deeply invested in a whole bunch of scripting stuff at the moment. So I default back to the web portal, but automation is the key, right? If you're doing it a bunch.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Let's see. Do we got anything else here we're going to talk about? I guess I see we had the CSOM. I was going to mention that real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So they, in the Microsoft for SharePoint 2013 in the December 2014 cumulative update release, they have some updates to the CSOM. So there's a point to a blog post by Vesa...
Juvenin?
Yes. By Vesa and Juvenin. Okay. I had to say it at least once to make sure I start saying it.
I'm probably completely balking it too, but it sounds better than your version.
And it's basically the things that you'll find that are new. You could set up a secondary site collection contact for a site level. You control audit settings in the site collection level, and you can control language settings at the site level, regional settings at the site level, and you can do detailed version settings at the list level as well. Those are all new areas that we didn't have before, and I'll put a link out there pointing to that.
Nice, nice. Hey, we've got a finishing up. We've got a review in iTunes, and if somebody can tell us how to get all of the reviews from iTunes, that would be great, because at the moment I go into iTunes and I have to flip between the gajillion different countries to find iTunes reviews. And so I was flipping through some countries and I found a 5-star review by a guy called NHomer66. And it was in the UK iTunes store from the 1st of July, 2014. So it was a while ago.
Wow.
And we miss these things because, it's impossible to flip between all these different countries in iTunes. So if anybody knows how to get all of the reviews out of iTunes, we'd love to know. But it says, I started listening to this podcast after an interview with Chris and Andrew on the SharePoint Pod Show and have been trying to catch up on all episodes since. This is a really informative and easy to listen to discussion on the main cloud services available mainly from Microsoft, but also from other players too. The recent guest interviews have been really great and informative. If cloud and Office 365 is something you want to know more about, then this is a good place as any to start. Great show, and keep it going.
Good.
And so thank you very much, in Homer 66 from the 1st of July, 5 stars. Please, if anybody else has a review, we'd love to hear from you. Either email in your questions or go leave us a review in iTunes.
Hey, I got one. I actually got one. I saw we got a message dropped in as a comment on the on our site by John Kresick. He sent it in on New Year's Eve 2014, but early on New Year's Eve, not late.
He's obviously having a really big celebration listening to the Cloud Show.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, it was at 9:37, so 9:37 in the morning, so it was okay.
Oh, okay, okay.
But gosh, you... Jeremy's sitting there Skyping me while I'm trying to talk to you right now. Jeremy, thank that is host of another good podcast. John Kresick, he says, great content and great conversational style, guys. Shows like this one have me looking at Microsoft tech more seriously. Happy New Year and keep it coming. That's awesome because that's exactly what, you know, people need to be talking about this stuff. I like the fact that someone's actually saying that, you know, hey, because of your attitude or your style, I'm opening my eyes to it. So that's very cool. Thank you very much, John.
That's great. Really cool. Really cool. Sometimes I think we fall off the too lackadaisical end of the spectrum.
Yeah, I think that that's what's important. I think keeping it light.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So with that, thanks very much, AC. It's been we'll try to keep this one short. And thanks everybody for listening. AC, you've got one more thing.
Well, we haven't done picks in a while.
Oh God, you got to put me on the spot.
I am. Well, I'll do mine. I have two picks.
Okay, go ahead.
I have two real quick picks. One pick is going to be the Azure command line interface, the cross-platform interface to interacting with Azure. Very cool stuff, very powerful. I think I need to write some posts about it too. But at any rate, that's one. And then the other one is I finally got my t-shirt and my stickers for a new command shell that's available for OS X that's wicked cool.
Nice.
Now, I know most of the listeners are on Windows. It's called Ziki, X-I-K-I, and that's a shark is the logo. But if you go check out, I'll put a link in the show notes to where go check out a YouTube video. It's still a manual kind of install, but it's a cross between a command shell and a wiki. So imagine like being in a wiki and anywhere you want, you know, going up, going down your command shell and just typing something in and having it spit back the response. You can go in and go back to where you type the command, modify the parameters and rerun it right from there. Instead of actually, you know, instead of saying run the command and then after it runs, you see the results and then saying, okay, you know, push the up arrow, get the command again, modify a little bit, hit it again, the whole screen scrolls. No, it doesn't do that. You'd run the command. Nope, let me go tweak it and rerun it. And it changes it. You can go into your results. You can add like headings. You can add notes and all that stuff.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
The video the guy did is wicked cool. You could sit there even from the command line. It was like navigating folders and creating. It was very powerful.
It sounds like a cross between OneNote and PowerShell sort of, you know?
It's a cross between a wiki and it's very much a cross between a wiki and a command prompt. So,
hey, I have one.
Oh, go for it.
It's got nothing to do with technology. Well, sort of technology. reddit.com/r/warship porn.
Oh.
So if you're into naval stuff of the seagoing variety, ships, subs, all that sort of stuff, there is some seriously cool old imagery, new imagery, old imagery, people talking about various different ships and subs and naval technology and military technology, I guess. And I posted up there the other day, my grandfather took a photo of some surrendering U-boats during at the end of Second World War. He was in the war and I posted those up there as well. So we'll go put a link to those off in the show notes as well. But it made me come across this subreddit called Warship Porn. And man, oh man, is that a time suck. I could spend hours looking at those photos.
You just screwed me up, man. I'm sitting here looking at an Oscar class Russian sub right now.
Yeah, it's crazy, eh? It's a very, very cool place to go read up about new and old technology.
Damn it. You totally just wait. There goes my day.
Thanks very much, AC. We will see you next week.
All right, man. Have a good one.
Cheers.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.